Welcome, movie lovers, back for another Anatomy of Movie here on Popcorn Talk. Today we dissect Alicia Vikander as she takes the mantle from Angelina Jolie in Tomb Raider. Stay tuned as we dissect.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Anatomy of a Movie.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It is Anatomy of a Movie. We have Marissa Serafini.
Hello, everyone.
Dimitri Panos.
Hey, movie fans.
And I'm Phil Svitek. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It's the reboot to Tomb Raider. Years down the line since we last saw Lara Croft on the big screen. And a couple of things right off the bat before we get into our overall thoughts. Number one, we assume that you've seen the movie, so know that it will be spoiler-filled. So you've been warned. If you're coming back, welcome back. If you're joining us for the very first time, welcome. You can, of course, get our rundown in the description box. It's a PDF that you click, you can download and follow along. It's a lot of good information that sometimes we get to, sometimes we don't always get to. And we're going to break things up into story, development, and production, and all those things, and talk about as many things as we can. But, of course, we encourage you guys to comment and rate and continue the discussion, because we just kind of get it started. But that doesn't mean it's one and done. Movies are great like that. We can talk about movies anytime. So without further ado, our overall thoughts on Tomb Raider starring Alicia Vikander. Marissa.
I love this film. It was fun. I'm just going to start us off like that. Big fan of Alicia Vikander. We've covered a lot of her films here, and I'm always praising her because she's effing amazing. And watching this, I mean, yes, I have seen the Angelina Jolie ones when they came out, and that was years ago. And I hardly remember what they even covered in those movies. And I'm glad I didn't actually go back to rewatch them because I forgot everything they covered. And I came into this new one with like a completely fresh slate, so to speak. And it was fun. We had a strong female. Love it. Love it. Protagonist. And she seemed just so realistic. And you wanted to be friends with her. She was cool. And she was badass when not trying to be, you know. And it had like fun emotional beats. There were dramatic moments. And there was a time consciously on screen. I'm just thinking, I was like, yeah, that's why Alicia Vikander is an Academy Award winner. Because she's an amazing actress. She's just so effing good. And I love this film. And I was actually just looking at movie times to go see this movie again. Yeah. Boom.
Dimitri.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this movie. I think it's a very fun popcorn action movie. And I think there's many things going on here. Fluid direction. I think that there's some smart writing. And Alicia Vikander's performance. And it adds for a good time at the movies. Is it like a masterpiece? No, but it's a very good time. Going to cinema, and we need that right now. So I had a blast, and I really think too that the director, Roar Utag, right? I think he did a really good job. I think he never relies heavily on hyper reality or hacksaw editing. So we were able to see the action. We were able to see who's fighting who without getting confused and dizzy. So. He did this great job of making a movie based off of a video game not look like a video game. You know, they shot it like an action movie of today, and they played, and the actors played it that way too. As opposed to just recently, I saw the horrendous Assassin's Creed, which they tried so hard to make. Number one, it's a hard concept. They were doing their best, but it just looks like they were filming to make it look like a video game.
And that's Alicia's husband.
Husband, right.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah.
Michael Fassbender.
And so, you know, that you didn't have here. And I actually thought that Geneva Robertson-Dwart and this Alistair Siddons, who they get credited for writing the screenplay, they did a good job because they wrote what's essentially an origin story that didn't feel like an origin story. Lara Croft is already Lara Croft. She doesn't have to become a superhero, so to speak. And on top of that, I really enjoyed how they wrote her, that character, because she's already smart. She is very persistent. She's very strong-headed. And again, I have to go back to the smart, because that is brought up very early on, that she could have gone to the best school. So, and we've seen her putting puzzles together. So I really like that. But the flip side is, she goes on a quest where she doesn't exactly know what she's doing. You know, and it's, and she doesn't know what she's going to step into, and how she might get out of it. So there's a vulnerability to her that was written in for the character that I think Alicia Vikander played to a T. And because of that vulnerability, I felt added to the strength of her character, made me believe in her more. So when she's in a situation and then something else happens, she's like, really? Stop! And I enjoyed those moments the most. So, yeah, really good time at the movies, and a really good action movie. I think probably one of the better ones, I think, to kick off this year.
I'll echo everything you guys said, and in particular, I love the moments when it is just pure action, whether it's the plane scene, whether it's the ship scene, all those moments where there's not necessarily an enemy, but it's just the elements that she's up against that made it really fun. And you can see her mind computing, what do I have to do to get out of this? And I appreciated that. And as far as a female character, I think I recommend this movie to anybody to really go see, because it's just a good movie in that sense to aspire to. And there's so many things that I've never seen before as far as action. I love the Hound and the Fox game, mm-hmm. and what it led to, and all those things. So there's nothing there. And I was worried. I wasn't that worried, but the supernatural elements, how they were going to play out, and the fact that they didn't go cheesy with it, and it was grounded in this reality, and it made sense. I certainly appreciate it, and even the button at the end, I'm ready for the sequel.
Me too. And I got two other points I want to ask you folks too. Number one, I found it very refreshing that this movie did not start off with a comic book logo. Right? I was like, oh, this isn't a DC or a Marvel movie, but it's an action movie, right? And to your point, Phil, like, she is, you know, she isn't a character that walks into a situation knowing how to handle the situation, but yet she still maintains and comes out a strong woman character. And at the same time, she's fun to watch. And I had such a good time with her journey that button at the end, I was like, ready for the next one. I'm ready for her next adventure, which I hope there is one. But I also enjoyed the villain in this movie, because this wasn't a villain who was hell-bent on either revenge or taking over the world. He was just hell-bent on getting off this island. His job was to do this one thing, which he's been plagued with failure after failure. He becomes almost like a Kurtz, and his moral compass gets blown away, and he just wants off. I don't care whether this thing is good or bad for society. This is what I got paid for. You're going to help me get off this. It was more,
he was getting cabin fever.
Yeah, I want to go back to my family. Okay, I don't care what this means for the world. That's what they're paying me to do. And I like that motivation. Again, played by Walter Goggins, who is great. He was a really good villain.
Plays a lot of villains too.
Yeah, and but it was a decent villain. He wasn't over the top, like so many of them can be. It was good. He was a fun villain to watch.
Also, I think the great thing about this movie, too, there was a good through line and just overall story arc of the whole Himiko. And, right. like, that was intriguing enough in how they started the movie off with this legend of her and how it just kept us going in the entire film. It took us from place to place to place. And it was a good enough intriguing story to get everyone still involved and still interested throughout the entire film.
Yeah, it's what The Mummy should have been. In a sense, you know, because you have this Himiko. I love this. I love that urban legend, that lore, the supernatural, as you said, how it plays into it. And they never tipped their hat. They never tipped their hand, I should say, as to it being cheesy. You bought into it, almost like you buy into the supernatural realms of an Indiana Jones movie, like the Ark of the Covenant and such, and Temple of Doom and everything. So you buy into that lore, but at the end of the day, it's really almost a MacGuffin to the story. It's about how the characters react or act to a particular situation. And I love the exploration, puzzle solving aspect of this, because that was a lot of fun.
Anyone knows me, I love puzzles. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm a big puzzle person. All my vacations, I'm always doing puzzles. And I like that aspect too, because it just shows, and we'll definitely get into character development too, but it also just shows that they're this character of Lara Croft. Like, she's smart. She can figure things out. It takes her a minute, but like anybody, when you're solving a puzzle, you have to think. And I liked how there were different aspects of puzzle, putting pieces together with the entire film of just the narrative and her physically actually literally doing it on screen.
Yeah.
Well,
let's break it down a little bit, because there's so much tie in to Lara Croft and her father, and she gets that from him. But really the crux, what makes this so uniquely separated of everything else, is the fact that Bond, her whole mission is not to get this thing. It's really to get to her father so she can end this all and figure out what happened 7 years ago and so forth. And that emotional crux, the way it plays out, and especially towards the end when, you know, you're kind of very happy with what's going on and the unthinkable happens where she's gone through this adventure and now to come to the end and to have to lose him. And that's the most painstaking of all, you know, but she kind of finds herself and yet she loses a part of herself at the same time. Because even before that, the father's gift was to her was, I want you to find your purpose in life. She thought it was finding her father.
Right.
But it extends beyond that.
Yeah. And I, you know, you bring up a great point, because we've talked here about the plot point of a character gets quote unquote killed off. And then maybe 10 minutes later, oh, character didn't die. They bring a character back only 10 minutes later to kill the character off again. And I was like, what the hell is the point of that? And this movie even takes, you know, they take it to a point where Lara Croft actually says, I didn't come all the way here to find you only to have you killed, right? And when that death comes, at least there was an ability to, there was a reason behind what happens. So I'm okay with that. And it wasn't like that character died to begin with. We were believed that he was dead, but he's surviving on this island. So I'm glad they put a twist on that, because that's a plot point that just always annoys me. Kill off a likable character. Oh, he's back. Oh, only to be killed again.
Well, also, it's not like they kept telling the audience that he's dead, he's dead, he's dead.
Right.
Where we, the audience, never physically see him actually die. So you know he's not dead. So, and I think the whole movie just leads up to eventually she's going to find her father. We knew that beat was coming.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Satisfactory. But when they killed him off, that was more frustrating. And I get that. And I did love their self-awareness and how she dropped that line, I didn't find you, XYZ. Also heartbreaking at the same time, because you're like, why did we spend this whole movie just to find him, just to lose him again? Very frustrating as an audience member. But if you think about it, the whole purpose of life, her purpose is completely different from her father's. Her father's purpose was to get the answers of Himiko, and we finally got the answers of Himiko. So what else, just a narrative standpoint, would he have to offer just in character storyline for this movie or for maybe potential future films, other than just being her father? He didn't have another storyline after this.
As far as what this movie does very differently is the fact that it layers all these things in. The first hint you get at it is she doesn't sign the paperwork initially. So it's like, okay, well, the paperwork's not signed. Therefore, symbolically, he's not dead, right?
Right.
So that's your first kind of clue at it beyond, you know, just an intuition. And then, but they what they did, I appreciated them messing with it, because when you see Mateus, Walton Goggins' character, right, he says point blank, I killed your father.
Right.
So in that moment, you're kind of questioning, you know, I could see there was no doubt that the father made it that far.
Right.
You know, certainly in her mind, certainly in my mind. And at that point, when he says it, there is a bit of questioning to, wow. And because he's at that point, he's also proven how insane he can be at doing this.
Right, exactly. And when he says that I killed your father, and then literally 2 seconds later, he just point blank shoots someone, it plays with the audience like, maybe he did kill his father, and he just wasn't properly documented. And I did like that, how it made the audience question, maybe he is alive, maybe he really is dead.
Yeah, and to me, that put a period at the end of the sentence. It actually, for Lara Croft, at that moment in time, that was like, okay, he's dead. And it was very, and again, it was a nice little twist to put in there for when he's not. So it's like, oh, he was lying. Liar! But I did enjoy how they had that character say, I killed your father. Because that's the end of the quest for her. What else does she have to do now other than to sort of get off the island, so to speak?
Which is a big task in and of itself at that point in time.
Of course.
Yeah.
So, but then things change again. It's part of what made this movie fun, is it's propelling you. And it moves forward with various twists and puzzles, some good set pieces, and it did it, and it hit good plot points.
Well, once we get to the big reveal, if you want to call it that, they're never, the dad and her don't see eye to eye until the final moments, which is what makes it all the more tragic, because he doesn't want her to do what she is doing and leading them down below.
Right.
That's the exact opposite of what he wants. So it was interesting to watch that play out the way that it did, but you understood both sides of it.
Mm-hmm. And I did like that he was staying on the island because he knew this was a bad thing. Like, this wasn't going to be good for, this wasn't going to be good for the world. Where Mateus was like, I don't care. I want to go home. Like, leave me. I want to go home. I don't care who it's good for. So I like that dichotomy. And you're right. With father and daughter not necessarily seeing eye to eye, but you still understood. You understood her motivation for sure.
Oh, yeah.
She just found her dad, and she's like, I'm not. We'll figure out how to get out of this when we're down there, but right now I'm keeping you alive. I just found you after 7 years of everybody thinking you're dead.
And so, even more so for her, how many times did they cut back to, I mean, we could just list the cast list for all the younger Lara Crofts. The amount of times that he's left, I'll be back faster than you'll realize I'm gone. Like, no, you've shown time and time again. That's not the case.
Years right. go by.
It did play, watching all the flashbacks and stuff. I was trying to, throughout the entire film, trying to figure out how old she actually is. Because, granted, Alicia Vikander is like my age. And so she's young. But they kept saying 7 years, 7 years. And they kept flashing back to young, like 7-year-old Lara. And then there was another flashback finally later on in the film where she's a teenager. I was like, okay, she's actually 7 years older than this. So it just kept playing with me. I was like, how old is she really when he actually left for the last time?
Yeah, I think she ends up being, by the way, I think I would guess 23, maybe 24, based on the fact that he asked her, hey, you know, what university did you go to? And she's like, I didn't go to university. So right. he assumed right. at that point she would have graduated and been doing something. So that's the age, I guess.
Yeah.
I young
was
enough.
Thinking 20, 21 to 24.
Yeah.
Like, around that.
Like, young enough.
She either would have graduated or maybe still have been in some semblance of college, whether it's a master or whatever. But I did like that she was young enough. And to me, this is a stark difference from the Angelina Jolie, which I have no real qualms with those movies.
Oh, yeah.
But Angelina Jolie is like, you know, she's full on, like, she was a woman, like, in that role. Where I like when you go at this age, still figuring things out for yourself in a sense. She's still coming to cope with her dad's death. I like that they said it this way because now they decide to go forward, right? We've got all these other adventures to explore as that character is getting older in front of our eyes. That's part of the fun when you do that for sequels.
Well, one of the nice things was that a lot of collaboration was put in as far as her character both from Alicia, both from obviously the screenwriters and so forth, but to make it very much grounded and have that sense of realism. And I think she did a wonderful job of helping make sure that it was portrayed and acted out that way, especially early on. I think she is very much relatable, whereas, you know, Angelina Jolie's Laura Croft, she's kind of like a Batman where it's too cool for school. Like, okay, you maybe want to be that person, but it's so far out of your reach that, you know, as far as this Laura Croft is concerned, the only thing that's out of anyone's real reach is, okay, she comes from $1 billion family.
Which right. She does not have any of that money yet.
She refused it in a way. Like, she wanted to make her own path. And, like, if we want to compare it to the Angelina Jolie, like, her version was gun-toting. Like, that was her main source of weapon. And in this one, in this new version, it's like, Laura Croft goes hand-to-hand compared to guns. And, like, she didn't get the guns till the end. So, like, she's in a way, made her more raw. Like, actual physical one-on-one, like, that made her more womanly, more grounded.
Yeah, and I also loved how the movie opened in the boxing ring, doing the MMA.
I loved it.
She got beat. And then when she's in the locker room. So, because what's important about that scene is you learn a couple of things. A, she's, you know, human. She's strong, she's human, but she can be beat. And she can get whooped. And her friend was like, no way, you got whooped. And so there's that. And
mama-lized.
Mama-lized. And then you learn that she's poor. And so for anybody who's at all familiar with the games or even the Jolie movies, like, poor, what happened? So, and I like how they explain why she's poor. Signing that paper solidifies her dad has passed away. So there are all good reasons for why she was in the situation that she was in. And then we go to the bike race, which is cool.
Awesome.
You know, to get, you know, she needs money. So, I liked the setup of this movie a lot because it really breaks the norms from what we've already seen in cinema for this character specifically.
Yeah. And speaking to the layering in, as far as the secret organization Trinity, which ends up being a different name on the books, right? That's layered in as well through Mateus and so forth. And, you know, that's the interesting part that it plays in. And I appreciate no thing was left just randomly or, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we did this? It serves a purpose to either move story along or character beats.
I think the whole setting up of Trinity was good because it was a great setup for a sequel that, like, yeah, I would totally watch the sequel, totally. But also, we just covered Darkest Hour.
Right.
With Kristen Scott Thomas. Right. And she was so awesome. She was, like, such a supportive, nice person that we really liked her character. And then to follow her in this movie, you're kind of already, like, thinking with this pre-existing thought that she's good, and there's your twist. You're like, oh yeah, they set us up for that. I didn't see it.
Yeah, it was well played, and again, it'll lead to further adventures of combating Trinity. So it sets that up very well, but yet it is still an enclosed that it still has a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Yeah.
Okay. So there was no thread that was left wide open, so to speak, that you go, oh, it's not a complete movie. I really felt that this was a complete movie in and of itself that lends itself to future adventures. And
they wrapped every storyline.
I'm with you. I mean, I was ready right there. When she took out the gun, she goes, I'll take two. I'm like, good. Let's. I wanted more. And that, to me, that's a good sign of a movie. If you want more right then and there.
Because, you know, as far as her character, right, the leader of Trinity, what you just have such an aha moment. Because at no point very early on, as you pointed out, Marissa, she seems very warm and loving. And just point blank, you would never suspect someone that's like about to be like, hey, you should take basically $1 billion, that person's in any way evil.
Right. And also, I think the Hollywood tropes worked against us, too, because when you see villain, you always think, man. I mean, we've gotten some recent movies where the villain is a female, but they worked us, they surprised us that, hey, she's also family. So, and you don't think a family would screw over another family member.
Right.
So I think there was two different factors that they played against us. Yeah. Very smart.
Yeah, and Kirsten Scott Thomas played it fabulously. Because at the beginning, it's like, sweetheart, sign the paper. It's like, you deserve this. He left this for you. This is all yours. And she was trying to talk, talking sense to her. Like, why aren't you doing this? You can go to the best. You deserve to go to the best schools. You buy into it. She was almost motherly,
she seemed genuine.
Very genuine.
Instead of disingenuous.
And then at the end you figure, well, she was genuine. She wanted her to take the money, and then she would disappear with the money. She wouldn't pay attention to anything else.
Well, also, and it has that double entendre where you understand as far as Mateus, the reason he tells her, like, I killed your father, as a failsafe to Trinity, worse comes to worse. If she does get off this island and doesn't help them, she goes back and signs these damn papers. Mm-hmm. So no stone is left unturned. Trinity is everywhere. I really love that about this movie. Another thing I love and that I want to talk to before we get into some of the nitty-gritty, Lou Ren. Mm-hmm. First off, very diverse cast in general, but absolutely, as far as friendship goes, and, you know, you could say it's a little bit on the nose. He lost a father, she lost a father, and there's that bond. But, you know, I think as they get into it, there's deeper connections beyond just that.
I liked him too, man. And first of all, I was like, yay, Asian. Asian representation. I loved it. Didn't expect that, honestly, at all in this film. So, like, that was a very welcoming sight. But also that the fact that, like, he was human too. He was a mess. He was drunk and hungover when we first met him. So, yeah. But he was also very likable. And he had his moments of levity and jokes and stuff. But he was also very loyal to Laura.
Sure.
And when she was in the cave in the tomb, really, he's like, I'm staying back to make sure she's okay. I was like, yeah, he's just a good dude.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked him. He was strong too, and he was just, not to say a good foil, but like a good companion that she needed also.
He's a good part of the team, or what we may get in future installments when she puts this team together. And yes, their fathers knew each other. And they died at the hands of Trinity or Mateus, for this quest, so to speak. And I enjoyed that character as well. There was a good chemistry there, but you see the forming of a team that they can rely on one another for each of their expertise. He was a good character, and I'm glad they didn't. They could have just made him a drunk throughout the movie, but they actually put him to good use. I enjoyed the same aspect you did of, like, now I'm going to stay here. I'm going to make sure.
Well, they did a good job of overloading initially his drunkenness. He knows as soon as she takes out money from the shoe, he's like, now I want to see the other shoe and all these things. And then so when it juxtaposes to what he actually ends up doing, yeah, you buy into it and you realize he's not just, as he pointed, Daniel Wu was very worried that he would just be a two-dimensional character, but he wasn't.
No.
He was fully fleshed out indeed.
I think this is a good example for this is how Asians should be represented in films. Not give them a two-dimensional character, but like give them a purpose, support someone, and actually give them also their own narrative too.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, regardless of race or anything, that's how you should go into thinking of something. And that's why, too, this is above and beyond for me, like your typical video game movie. Because it really did, to me, I looked at this as a flat-out action movie that was just smartly written. There wasn't a time outside of Lara Croft and the title of the movie that I'm thinking, wow, this is reminding me of a video game. And they played it straight, and the actors played it straight too. And I really appreciated it for that fact.
Well, I think so. I want to talk. Let's talk about Alicia Vikander, and we'll kind of break off from there too. You know, she approached it with the realness. We can certainly talk about all the extensive work she put in to put on this muscle and so forth. But one of the biggest things of why you're reminded that the original Tomb Raider is more of a video game versus this is there's plenty of articles if you just Google, you know, Tomb Raider and feminist and whatever. Here, the Lara Croft that's represented, yes, she's a female. She's gorgeous. I'm not going to deny that. However, her clothing and the way she is out in the world, it's very purposeful towards what she's doing, right. You know? Whereas, no offense, those booty shorts, as great as they may be on Angelina Jolie, probably not the most practical things in the jungle.
Right.
Yeah, no, exactly. And for that reason, because Angelina Jolie, her character just seemed like unattainable. Unattainable to the point where it's not realistic. I mean, if I remember correctly, one of the opening scenes of, I forget which one, forgive me, but it's when she's like hanging upside down on a wire. Like, no one can do that on an everyday basis. Like, but when we see the Lara Croft in these movies riding a bike and being in a boxing ring, yeah, a lot of people do that every single day. Like, there were so many realistic aspects to this Lara Croft that made him more relatable to people and more likable also in a way compared to Angelina Jolie's, her clothing. They made her a sex symbol.
Well, that's too, I mean, that's part of
that
game.
They made it way more sexy.
That, in that time period when those games were as popular, I mean, it wasn't until the 2013 game, which sort of revamped and rebooted the series as well, which they're basing this movie off of. That's, you know, back then, that's how that game was engineered, put together. But I do like, I like this one much better because of, just because, like I said earlier, the vulnerability that the character had, the character could get hurt. And had to really put herself in situations where she really didn't know what she's doing. She just had to, I need to get from point A to point B. That's all she knew. And oh, how am I going to do that with this? And like, oh no, this just came up. In the way Alicia Vikander played her too was a nice breath of fresh air. You know, it was good to see a character just go into a situation. Really not jumping into it, but that's what she needed to do without really having all the smarts and figuring things out.
Yeah, but there was also moments where she actually had obstacles too that she had to get through, from going place to place. The moment when she got impaled, that felt painful. That looked painful. And then when she actually had to take that moment when her father was like stitching back up, actually a great moment. She's like, this hurts me more than it'll hurt you. I loved it. But also, it just shows how human she is. Uh-huh. Because, yeah, if you were actually put in that situation, yeah, you're probably going to get impaled by something and almost die.
I'm probably going to get slammed for this, but I'm only making the comparisons because of the characters. When you look at Indiana Jones, part of what makes that character so iconic and lovable is that he, too, can get beat in a fight and get hurt, right? That's part of it. When you look at John McClane from the first Die Hard movie, like that
so
character gets beat up, and he's in a situation where he's like, what are you doing here, John? Okay, I'm not saying that Tomb Raider is better than either of those two movies, but why do you like Die Hard? Why do you like Indiana Jones? Because they are fallible characters. They can get
going.
Hurt. Yeah.
They kept going after
they
got hurt.
And they kept going.
Well, here's a big difference, though, too. And everyone was very conscious in the writing to make it as such. Despite Indiana Jones getting beat up, he's still cocky as can be. Right?
Totally.
Whereas Laura, in these situations, she understands. She's not thinking about her comeback line as she just got punched. She's thinking about, yeah, this is a foe, and I have to figure out how to get through this in this situation, and that's what I'm going to focus on. So to me, again, I'm not saying I love Indiana Jones. I'm not saying that, but as far as this goes, I appreciate that she didn't have that arrogance to just be like, oh, yeah, is that all you got? Come on, hit me again, hit me again. Mm-hmm. So it played it really well. And, you know, as far as her regimen, so many articles about it, but, you know, she really wanted to do this right, and she did most of her own stunt.
Yeah.
Which mm-hmm. is cool, which is very cool.
Yeah, and she trained like a ballerina from this Magnus, there's no way, Leidbach, who has his own Magnus method of balance and fitness, mind, body, and preparation, and he does it through ballet. And ballet is a hardcore sport. Vikander, and this is, and not only was it like ballet, but there was a weight regimen, a diet regimen, and even during production, she never stopped. She trained for 45 minutes to an hour every morning before heading to set. So, yeah, she showed up prepared.
Yeah, and the trainer, Magnus, he's also trained Alexander Skarsgård for Tarzan, and right? We talked about his crazy regimen during that anatomy. Gal Gadot for
Wonder Woman.
Right. So and like he's worked with a lot of celebrities in that way. But her training regimen was crazy. Like they did a lot of different exercises from squattings to push-ups, pull-ups, deadlifts. Training on machines, plyometrics, explosive training, MMA fighting, so lots of different things. And then her diet regimen was crazy. She would eat every third hour, and it was the keto diet. So she had like eggs in the morning, rice in the afternoon, chicken at night. You know, like
fish fillets.
Yeah, it was like high carbs, high fat.
Yeah. Yeah,
for months.
Yeah, slow carb, lean protein, nothing that I really eat. and her favorite meal was the runny eggs poke in Asian fusion combinations. And then she ate five times a day at three-hour intervals. They built a 24-meter-long gym. It was a truck that they converted into a gym for her to work out at. And then, you know, she said that this Magnus program also allowed for a little bit of reality because her favorite days was pizza days.
Sunday.
She got to eat pizza.
She had a cheat day. Good for her.
Well deserved.
And she was so excited for her cheat day because every day, every Sunday, she'd wake up, she's like, it's pizza day.
Yeah.
You know, she had that mentality. And I like that because that also just makes her likable as a person, too. Like, she's human.
Mm-hmm.
Give her damn pizza.
Yeah, and she performed in her boxing. I mean, she did the boxing. She did a lot of the stuff. Again, a lot of the stunts, which, you know,
She was sculpted, though.
She was. Goodness. She looked great.
If you want an exercise, you get on this exercise.
Yeah, I don't think I could survive the exercise. But, no, she was fantastic. She was great. She really looked... There wasn't a time where I didn't believe that her strength and agility could help her get out of something. But
so, let's talk about... favorite action set pieces.
Sure.
You know, I want to know what was your favorite action set piece, and if it's the end one, we'll discuss it further at length. I want to talk about that one in length particularly, but if it's not, what would it be? Is it?
I mean, I really like the plane and the whole ship sequences because I never played the game, so I don't know. And those were like apparently ripped straight from the game.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just cool to see this character and the situation and how she dealt with it and, like, swimming and, like, going down the river. And, yeah, that it probably sucked in real life, and I don't blame you, girl. But the way that the character just, like, had to systematically think her way out of the situation, like you said earlier, Phil, it was fun to watch, but also very calculating, just showed how smart she is and how innovative she is just for survival. And that was just fun because... and I didn't expect it at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the running through the jungle or the escape through the jungle where she ends up by the waterfall, where that plane is anchored, again, to me, it was layered very much. It's a great action movie because they sit upon obstacle and obstacle and obstacle. This thing is so rusted, you can't walk on it. You know, and then she's inside and trying to cut her cords that are her bindings. Hand bindings. And then the water's rushing through and the plane's breaking apart all around her. That's where she goes, really? Oh, really? She's like, come on. But it was filmed really well. There was excitement. It was a good, thrilling scene. I did like, probably the scene that may have most looked like a video game is running through the tomb and those big spiked, like, mm-hmm. logs mm-hmm. were coming and she had to, like, jump or slide underneath. The booby traps. Those were fun scenes. Jumping off the ship when they crash in the island.
Yeah, I mean, you get even early on, you get her backpack being stolen.
Oh,
that
yeah.
That in itself is an action sequence. For me, I really loved the biking sequence. Mm-hmm. I have yet to see or that I can recall seeing something like that. And it was just so fun. And the way she went about, like, picking up her bike and riding on the back of a truck, that was very smart.
And that's actually based on those illegal races do happen a lot in Europe. So that's actually rooted in reality.
Up.
Yeah, pretty awesome. Another one that I actually really liked, also just for the puzzle aspect, was when the floor was breaking.
Yeah.
And she had to figure out the color puzzle piece. I'm like, what color is it? But it was just so well executed and edited that built the tension. Oh, these people are going to die. They're not figuring it out.
Reminded me of the
Goonies. I'm losing floor.
Yeah, I'm losing the floor.
But there was humor also throughout.
Oh, absolutely.
During moments of anxiety that these people are going to die.
Yeah.
I think that was really well done.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole going down deeper and deeper, everything just played so well to it. There was just so much tension, and then we finally, the reveal of who she is, and all the little pieces that they intertwined of the one has to sacrifice for the many, and this and that, right. and so forth. And when the twist is, oh wait, she wasn't imprisoned,
mm-hmm.
she put herself here in there.
Mm-hmm.
For a very particular reason,
and that was a nice twist too. Like, you know, it's nothing that we've come to expect. It was not like, again, the mummy where she was entombed because she was evil or did this crime. This person, it was a self-sacrifice. And she understood what was ill-gotten gain, so to speak, if this virus were to ever mm-hmm. come out. And again, only... But you're saying, like, the way that it was written, we're only told at the audience, it all builds up to that end when you get, oh, it's not what we've been being told. Like, this is a different story when they see everything.
Yeah,
it's
it also just switches the moral message
yes.
of the whole thing. Because at the beginning, literally when they're explaining the whole Himiko, it tells the audience that this is, like, a pure act of evil upon the world. And then when we find the actual reveal, it was like, no, it's actually saving humanity, not destroying it. So it brought a more positive spin to this story that we weren't expecting.
Yeah, and she's not the pure act of evil. It's the virus that's the pure act of evil.
In Trinity,
yeah. It was,
right.
It just makes it all the more hard. Rather than, basically, you didn't need two entities that were trying to take over the world. And that was nice to see. It's a breath of fresh air that we've yet to see, I think.
Yeah, hope in humanity.
In a while. Like, you know, it's like, that's one of the reasons I like this movie so much, because there were different things, whether it be not seeing a comic book logo, and yet we still had a good action movie.
Yeah.
You know, we had a good, fun character, a good, fun female character. I don't know. Personally, I got to be honest, I don't understand why there aren't more people like us talking about it the way we are, to be honest with you. I mean, because
they're making it too many comparisons to the other films, like Marvel, like to the other Tomb Raiders. And I get that.
This can exist, though. Like, this doesn't have to be those. It can still exist as a good, thrilling action movie.
Well, you know, we'll get to it. But luckily, what it's not making up for in the U.S., it's certainly making up for internationally,
yes.
So we'll talk about that. But let's talk about the production. Shall we? Our good friend Roar, not literally but figuratively, the director of this, just really did a wonderful job. And he was a fan of the video games when they first came out, and he played them all the way back in Norway. And so he got really excited when he got the opportunity to do this. And I think, you know, we sometimes talk about it. There's a passion for certain projects. And unfortunately, as of recently, we've seen it not be fulfilled to what you would expect based on that level of passion. I think with this, it's quite the opposite. The passion worked out and actually was executed tremendously on his part.
Yeah, and for all the physical elements and just mm-hmm. the narrative standpoint, not once was it actually lost in this film.
No.
There was a very through line throughout the whole play.
Absolutely. And to your point, Phil, though, sometimes, and I'm going to throw this out to the audience, to you folks, when we hear that word, there's a passion for it. Sometimes those people take that passion as their own passion. So they make it for themselves, and they forget sometimes to make it for an audience. Mm-hmm. And he didn't forget any of that. Like, what makes the game thrilling? Not for me, but what makes it popular for everybody? And I want to make something that, yes, I have a passion for, and I want to treat it well, but I understand I'm making it for audiences. And I want to do a cross. I want to get all quadrants to come in and see this. So I'm making an action movie. And it looked really good. And like I said, there wasn't that hacksaw editing that we're always used to in these types of movies.
Action.
Well, but it's cut, just cut here. And you don't know who's fighting who. You get dizzy. I didn't find that here. And yeah. While there was slow motion, which we've talked about here, can be tedious when it's overused, but here it was used very sparingly, and I was like okay with it. I was all right. So,
and I was very surprised at how much they were able to fit in under 2 hours. Yeah. And that's including the credits too. Honestly, because I was watching, I was like, oh, we went to so many locations, to so many places, we did so many things. If you really look at it, a movie of that amount just on paper we've seen could end up being 220 or 230 in terms of length.
Mm-hmm.
And so I appreciated what they were able to do, and George Richmond, who recently did he did Kingsman Secret Service, not the follow-up, but he was the cinematographer for this. And so you could see when you're talking about that action, Kingsman is nothing if not action.
Right.
Certainly the original.
And a lot more hyper-real than I would argue, than Tomb Raider. I think this one was just a bit more grounded.
Defied, like, gravity in so many different ways. Yeah. But also that movie, like, that's another example of going from obstacle to obstacle to obstacle.
Right.
And, but also fun at the same time.
Sure.
And like, what I liked about it is because, Phil, you were saying from place to place to place, we did span the world. I mean, we went from London to South Africa and like then back to London and I like that because
Hong Kong.
Yes, in Hong Kong, like mm-hmm. a lot of different places, but it also just shows how internationally the story it can be important just all over the world.
Right.
And without it being forced either, it all made sense of, okay, you understood we're not just going to Hong Kong for the sake of going to Hong Kong. It's Himeka is somewhere in this Pacific region.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So in order to get there, here's the best location to kind of start with.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's the only guy that was crazy enough to go with me.
Yeah.
So I appreciated that. And, you know, the locations themselves, for me, breathtaking. Every single mm-hmm. one of them. And I appreciated that. For the whole time, I never thought anything was too digital. We often talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
There was a realness to it. Even I'm sure, you know, the plane sequence was done with green screen or blue screen, whatever, around and so forth. And it just works to a very high level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and every location that they went, you can clearly understand what location they were. You know, in London, it was more gray and blue and saturated. In Hong Kong, very colorful, very vibrant, but like boats everywhere and like the different cultures. And then when we went to South Africa, very gritty, very right. dirty, on dirt everywhere and shooting and jungle everywhere. So like they all had the different feels for every environment.
Right.
Absolutely. In particular, I love they used obviously a real location for Croft Manor. It was called the Wilton House near right. Salisbury.
And Wiltshire.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Very very real location. Very extravagant location for sure. But when you think of the Croft family, you certainly think of that house.
Yeah, absolutely. And, great. You know, I mean, they were in Hackney. They were in Shoreditch, which I actually stayed in Shoreditch. It's a cool place. But I also like that a lot of principal photography is accomplished in and around Cape Town in South Africa. They went to Hong Kong. You know, that Hong Kong harbor sequence was shot on location at Hout Bay. And that's a quaint fish. Well, that's actually in Cape Town. But it was so realistic that the... what's the gentleman's name who plays the gentleman who played? We were just talking about him. And
Daniel.
Yeah,
Daniel.
Yeah, I mean he's from there, and when he walked on set in Cape Town, he's like, "Oh my god!" It's like I used to live in a fishing village. This looks like they got every detail right. Like it's amazing what they were able to accomplish. It's movie magic, really. I mean, I felt as if I was in each of those locations, much like an extravagant Bond movie. You really feel like you're getting the culture from wherever the character is going. And into it, you know, it's not, again, Indiana Jones does the plane sequence, right? We didn't really get a lot of that, but
we got the lower third. Right. Well, it was just text, rather. It was right. like full lower third. Mm-hmm. But
I really... felt I like whatever location that they were supposed to be in, I felt as if I were there. You know, they had the culture, they had architecture done to a T, the smells and everything. Like that bag chase was great.
Yeah, and you're not. Great. That's also another thing you're not expecting.
Right.
I was like, these guys are too nice. Don't trust them.
Right. Yeah. I will. Yep.
The side eye.
That.
But I like that. But it also just shows like how badass she is because she chased him down. And then she was being chased by three guys. And I'm like, that's cool.
But it was the reversal and then the reversal. She's chasing them. Then she gets what she wants. But hey, now we have guns.
Right.
Yeah, it was a knife, rather. Sorry.
It's not over.
So it really worked out really well. A lot of good stuff. And... you know, not again. As far as like CGI, I'm sure a lot went into it, but it's not. I can't watch the movie and pick out specifically like, oh, that they definitely had to CGI that or whatever. Mm-hmm. Just very much. I mean, if I didn't know filmmaking, I'd say, oh wow, they shot everything the way that it should have been.
It's like when the water hit.
Yeah,
and they say in a lot of interviews that Alicia got hit like 25 times. Like, what a trooper.
And it's funny because as opposed to a movie like Jumanji, which I recently watched, every single... like, yes, you can tell they're in Hawaii. And yes, you can tell they used a lot of CG. Like, a lot of CG. Where in this movie, I felt that there was probably a lot. But it was, to your point, difficult to discern between... where it blended in naturally... at least the way I watched it.
And it's tough because we normally, to pull off CG, you try to mask it in darkness.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And here, yes, we had night scenes, but we also had a lot of day scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found that fascinating that they took that that gumption and just kind of went for it to pull it off in the way that they did.
Right. The whole river scene was during the day. And they said that Alicia got dropped into the water with her... hands actually bound about 20 plus times. Like, that's actually her going down the river. So, I mean, good for her.
Yeah.
That was real. That's practical.
Yeah. And building the endurance, which is funny how they cut to, like, why they ended up having to. they looked upon the Endurance, the boat, as a character, and they were thinking about buying a boat or hiring one, but it was the start of tuna season in Cape Town, and there were no boats for them available, so they designed a boat that worked on a pontoon, so it float in a tank, but also had movement. They went on 5-axis gimbal and withstood tons of water from cannons for that critical sequence. Again, the practical effect really works. They're not on a CG. They didn't put this in afterwards. They were getting bounced around, getting shot with water cannons. And the whole tank for the Endurance was built at Cape Town Film Studios.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
I mean, Elise is actually in the cold water, and she said it sucked, but she didn't complain. Not once did she complain. But there was a day where she had a breakdown because the water is so cold. It's like 50 degrees, and she's spending 12 hours in 50-degree weather, mm-hmm. 50-degree water every single day for 2 weeks. She did have a breakdown, but eventually she got through
it. And even with a wetsuit.
She got through it.
Yeah, even with a wetsuit. Yeah,
suffer for your tough. Art.
It gets Go cold. Woman. It gets cold, for sure. As far as the music, you know, something we talked about recently with another movie, I don't want to besmirch it again, but they use too much instrumental. Did they use too much non-instrumental music? Mm. Whereas this, as far as the music, this is what I was looking for and want in an adventure movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want the over-the-top, larger-than-life, and even even the first Tomb Raider, yeah, sometimes like it was part of the scene where like music would play, but it just became too cool.
Right.
You know, I'm of the camp, like, I don't think it's a great movie, but it, you know, I'll revisit if I ever needed to or wanted to, or if it's on TV just playing. Fine, you could say I like Angelina Jolie, sure.
Well, this is done by J.K. Or Junkie XL. He's Hans Zimmer light. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've worked together on movies. I think Batman vs Superman.
I mean, yeah, he just did Justice League, so obviously it's, you know, that the Wonder Woman's theme is derivative from Batman v Superman, right. And so forth. So tied to that DC universe,
it has that. I think with the movie that it works really well. I was actually listening to the soundtrack just this morning. In prepping for this, what I was surprised at listening to the soundtrack without the movie is that there was a subtleness to some of the score, right? But when there wasn't subtleness, again, I thought, oh, yeah, of course, this is him and this is Hans Zimmer light. This is what Hans Zimmer does. But to everybody's credit, it did not overpower the movie in one way, shape, or form. No. Because you had so much loudness going on and so much happening in the movie that it was a perfect bed to keep the momentum, I felt.
I agree. And even, I haven't listened to it separate of it, but just even knowing the ending, I just remember having this feeling and the music was building up. And it built up that feeling for me. And very rarely, unless it's a Marvel movie, we don't get a mid-credit scene. Mm-hmm. And boom, there goes Tomb Raider. We see, I forget how the exact sequence, but, and then we come back for the two guns.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in.
I did like that moment. I was like, there she is.
Yep. Yeah,
you know, there she is. That's the one that, I mean, like, if anything, the first two movies did right was establish that, hey, she is a gun-toting bitch who's right. Awesome. Like, and you're kind of expecting that throughout this movie. But and so when we finally get that moment, I was like, yeah, that's what we actually know and love.
Yeah. And she handled it well. I actually thought Nick Frost, because of the trailers, was going to be in the movie more. Mm-hmm. But you can see or sense how his character and the wife, they were funny.
Funny.
They were so funny. And it wasn't like over the top. It was... They were integral and they were organic to the story, but you could see how they will be, well, I hope, part of the team,
mm-hmm.
you know, as far as getting her weapons and explosive or whatever, and they'll do it in an entertaining fashion. Having Nick Frost and the repartee he had with his wife was It was classic. It was funny.
And it's just a good moment because it's that final bow to wrap it all up as far as the necklace. She gets the necklace back because, you know, in all sense of it, you really didn't necessarily need that scene. And yet, it just felt so right to get that back.
Right, but also the representation of just the necklace. At that moment when she gave away the necklace, she was letting go of her father. She finds her father, lets him go again, and then, like, gets her father back in a way via the necklace. It's just the whole representation of it I loved.
In a sense, it's almost picking up the mantle. Getting the necklace back is picking up the mantle of her dad's, like, what her dad's secret life was. Mm-hmm. And she has her purpose. It was a good bow. It really was.
Absolutely. So let's start breaking down pure numbers of this. Opening weekend, it came in second to Black Panther, which is kind of surprising because Black Panther didn't necessarily make all that money that weekend. And so I'm glad for Black Panther that it's still withholding at the number one slot. I would have wished that it was holding at a higher level, and therefore, even if Tomb Raider was number two, it had. I was just as disappointed that it didn't get as much as it could have.
Especially in its first week.
Especially after watching it. That's why. I'm glad that this is the first time, I think, that the three of us really... I forget the last movie we were all on board in a positive way. In a positive way, which is important. But I'm sort of surprised that there aren't more people like us who are talking about this movie in a positive way. I had felt that this movie could have done... 30. I thought it was going to unseat Black Panther. When that final number of 23 million came out, I was a little bit, I was like, oh, I wanted it to do so much more because I really felt that it was deserving so. And then it made me wonder, Warner Brothers, why did you sort of kind of hold back? Like, why didn't... I mean, you had the goods. Did they maybe not believe in the movie as much? But, I know you were going to talk about international gross.
But, but it's also just that the factors going into this film is like, you have a strong female protagonist, and we've been seeing more of those movies, thank God, fortunately, in this past years of Hollywood. So you have your strong leading female protagonist, and then you already have an established franchise. It might be just people are franchise tired.
Franchise-weary?
I get that, yeah.
Possible.
I get that, too. But also, you have established names like Alicia Vikander. Mm-hmm. She's an Academy Award winner. And you have gravitas to the film as well, and you think you would do better.
Yeah, and I'll go in too. I mean, in complete honesty, when I heard that they were doing another a Tomb Raider movie, I did ask, is this necessary? But then I saw the trailer, and I said, you know what? She's in this movie. The trailer looks good to me. I go, okay, I'm in. It became an anticipated movie for me, and I thought that they did cut a good trailer that didn't look like it was going to be cheesy. It looked like it would be fun action. So... And with Vikander in it, you're right. She brings along with it a bit of credibility. And there wasn't a time where I said, "What is she doing in this movie?" Like Michael Fassbender, "What are you doing in Assassin's Creed?" Mm-hmm. I didn't ask that while watching this at all, or even watching the trailer. I was like, "Oh, it's a good choice. You actually could pull this off." And ultimately, she and cast and crew did.
Yeah. Well, to me, it's tough because the reviews don't come out until more recent to the premiere, obviously. But I wonder if there was any sense of, okay, the critics might not love it, and how do we handle this? Because as of right now, it's got a 42% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is just, it's atrocious that's what it has to be.
Is it 40? Because that's 50 as of this morning.
Oh, well, then it went up because of us.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, but that's a representation of a low number that deserves a higher score.
I couldn't agree
80.
With...
Give it an 80.
Yeah.
80. Because 50% is what you usually give maybe a horror movie, right? Or even a comedy. Because you know it's going to be divisive. Some people like horror. Some people like that kind of comedy. So 50, I go, okay, there's a chance I'll like it. But 50 for this, after I walked out, I was like, why is this getting... like, why isn't it getting better reviews? I don't understand. Is it because it's related to a video game, or I couldn't. Because what's out there that's like it right now in the marketplace? You know, Black Panther. You know, but I can't compare this movie to Black Panther. Like, this movie is its own entity, and I thought that they did a great job of making it not look and feel like a video game.
Well, they did. A lot of people, as far as criticism, are saying it's paint by the numbers. But okay, whether it is or
but
you have
did you
a
paint
format,
the lines?
You know, you can look at Van Gogh and so the man uses paint. Therefore, his art's like, what? It doesn't make any sense. I don't know. Like, I'm trying to, but basically, it's a moot point to me. It doesn't actually exist. Like, yes, it has certain tropes and so forth, but the way it tells it is engaging enough that so who cares if it's, quote, paint by the numbers. First off, I don't believe that it is, but even if it is, it's engaging enough.
Yeah.
It's entertaining. It's like when we talked about Game Night, because that was another movie that I thought about, right? Not a perfect movie by any chance, but I laughed. I came out of the theater going, I would give that a thumbs up. That's a good movie. Go see that movie. It's fun. Mm-hmm. This movie, not a masterpiece, but why does it have to be? Like, are we really setting our well, like, I think the words masterpiece and great and visionary, they become thrown out so often that they ruined what the word actually means. Tomb Raider isn't a masterpiece, but who cares? It is a very good time. While I'm sitting down having some popcorn, the audience I saw it with applauded. Mm-hmm. They liked it. And I'm like, this is why we go to the movies, to have fun. And especially after coming off of movies like Three Billboards and things, it's good just to see a movie that is an action movie that I can have a good time at. So I'm very glad that this movie is doing very well overseas.
Yeah.
You know, because its worldwide box office is $162 million, right? That's not too shabby. It's done $132+ million, so that's 81.6% of the gross, which is pretty cool. So I have a new theory, too, about international box office. I used to report box office. I've said this before for Lionsgate many a time, and we'd always include Canada gross. Why do you include the Canada gross into the North American gross? Because it juices the gross a little. And then there came a time when they started to add international gross. They did it to juice the gross at the time. But I think nowadays, international market, my thinking has changed. I've done actually a complete 180. Because to me, what the international gross does is it proves we have so many naysayers about the movie industry. It's losing money. Not enough tickets sold domestically. Audience, we're losing audience. What's going on here? Well, when you look internationally, movies aren't losing audience. Like, if a movie like this can come out and do $132 million on foreign soil, movies are a global entity now. Completely global now that we can get those grosses from overseas. And each market, like China, is becoming bigger and bigger. Our export of movies fuels the world, you know, for entertainment. We bring in some of it too, but we fuel the world for entertainment. Movies are global. They are no longer just domestic.
But also in fairness, Elise is a big name overseas. Daniel Wu is a big name in China. Mm-hmm. Like, he is a humongous star in China, and people don't really know him as well here in America, but he's huge in China. Mm-hmm. So I think that also helped with the international growth, too. I read in an interview that they compared Daniel Wu. He's like the Brad Pitt of China. Mm. So, like, he has big name and credibility over there, too. So that could help with the international.
No, absolutely. But it goes
I get
more
it.
To
it's
my
a global
theory.
Thing.
It's a movie going is global. Yeah. People overseas enjoy going to the movies, big and small, because we talked about Darkest Hours, even movies like Three Billboards. Like, these movies had an international presence, and they're small movies. But then the argument goes, oh, but it didn't do Black Panther numbers or more. Yeah, not every movie is ever going to do those kind of numbers. That's a bar that's set.
Black Panther also had a different message and a different takeaway than this movie did.
But Avengers, the next Avengers movie is going to be huge, right? But those other movies that are doing $100 million, we can't, like, ignore those. Those are equally good movies to go to. You as well. You just said, I'm looking for showtimes. I want to see this again.
Yeah.
Right?
I probably will see this
so, again. You know, I applaud looking at international grocers. I think in today's current market for the movie business, I think it really does showcase that the global business
movies well, it'll be interesting to see its hold up because as far as this weekend's concerned, we've got Pacific Rim Uprising, which Marissa and I have actually gotten a chance to see. We think it's a great movie. I think it's going to be a similar case of it's going to do far better internationally than it does domestically. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Isle of Dogs, the Wes Anderson movie, it's Wes Anderson. But, again, to that point, he's going to make Wes Anderson box office numbers. So we'll see
domestically.
we'll see where this lands ultimately. I really hope that it's only got to be on CinemaScore, but I do hope that there is a word of mouth that can kind of at least for this weekend, you know, continue it and have a pretty good holdover. When you talk about, you know, let's just say round up to 25 million, the holdover from one to two, you know, you're never going to be able to hold onto a $200 million gross from one weekend to the next.
No, but what's a 40% drop from 25?
20.
Is it, yeah, but
I don't know. I'm just making stuff up.
Oh, okay. Because I was trying to figure it
don't
out.
Don't ask me,
Matt. It's going to be between 40 and maybe 50% drop. I mean, considering you have another action movie coming out. But again, if there is a sequel to be made, it's going to be made because of the international box office. They'll make it, we'll see it here, of course, but because it is doing well internationally and overseas, that helps with that $94+ million budget that they had. I was bummed that this movie didn't play as well box office wise, and when I saw CinemaScore, I'm like, who are they asking?
Right. I thought the exact same thing.
Right, I'm like, who are they asking?
Who scored this?
Yeah. It seemed a little bit better than like a B to me. I didn't find this movie to be mediocre at all.
Yeah, no.
So anyway, we can all agree that it's a good movie. We're confused by some of the reviews and so forth. And so we turn to you, the good people of wherever you're from. Leave us a comment. Let us know what you guys thought. And be honest, you know, if you didn't like the movie, let us know why. You're entitled to that opinion. I'm not going to take that away from you. But if you love the movie, same thing. Why did you love the movie? And we'll be happy to converse with you. At the end of the day, all we do is we're an exploration on ideas and thoughts as to how and the why.
Have either of you played a Tomb Raider game?
Once or twice. Not enough to like be a...
Same here.
No, I've never played it.
Same here.
Watching this film, I had a thought afterwards. I was like, yeah, I might want to play the game.
This could be fun.
Yeah, it could be fun.
Actually, I did too.
In all seriousness, right, I will give... You have to kind of give credit to the game. Yes, it had a very sexualized beginning as far as the character. But in terms of any female character in video games, the fact that she's been this long...
The longevity of the character
is insane. And there's a lot of interesting articles, which I didn't want to get into today as far as this. But if you just Google Tomb Raider, Lara Croft, video game, legacy, and so forth, like the fact that... It has withstood the test of time, despite its early beginnings and all that. You know what? I'm glad it's changing that persona of who she is. And you know, if it took sort of that to get us here, then you know what? The ends justify the means, hopefully.
But if you look at this film as the film without comparisons to the game, it's a very solid film. Narration, storyline, directing... Editing, acting, like overall, it's a very solid film.
And you don't need familiarity with the game. And I'm sure if you've played the game, particularly since 2013, maybe you'll like it more. you know, I think they did. And I know when they rebooted this too, like the new games have gotten, like, from IGN, fantastic reviews of gameplay and such. So, but I haven't played it. I really enjoyed what they did with this. You know, and I hope, fingers crossed, that we get to see Alicia Vikander play this role again. And I hope they don't take too long
to do it.
My guess would be 2 years. Yeah. Usually if you get on a roll, 2 years is what it ends up being. The only thing that I think is a misstep and I'm personally bummed about is there's not a Tomb Raider video game. I think there's one coming out later this year. Mm-hmm. But I'm a now kind of generation.
Yeah.
Anyway. That about does it for us. Thank you guys as always. Any final thoughts, Marissa?
I love this film. I would see it again or buy it when it comes out on DVD and Blu-ray.
That's funny that you say that. I believe, according to Blu-ray.com, I believe the pre-orders are up already for sale on Amazon.
Well, let me pull out my phone.
So there you go. The movie is a very fun. It achieves what it's supposed to be. It's a very fun, good popcorn movie, has thrilling action that's added to better than you would expect performances and a smartly written character. So I can't recommend the movie. I give it a very big thumbs up for this movie. It's worth seeing on a big screen. Sound design was fantastic too, especially the plane sequence.
Great. Totally.
It's a fun movie. That's what we should be going to movies for.
Yeah. Well, I'll even switch it up. If it was a paint by the numbers, you would only have one, if you're lucky enough, one great character. Whether it's the friend, whether it's the enemy, even her father, and certainly the villain at the end, they are not two-dimensional characters. They serve a larger purpose. And so the fact that an action movie was able to pull that off, don't think is paint by the numbers.
And Dominic West was really good as the dad, too.
Right. I want to see these characters back.
Me too.
Absolutely.
Me too. Now. In your world of now.
Absolutely. All right, well, again, that does it for us. In the meantime, you can interact with us, as I mentioned. But for more deeper interaction, at Serafini TV for
That's
Marissa.
Right.
At DMovies 1701 for Dimitri.
Yes.
And I'm at Phil Svitek. Thank you guys as always. And check us out here on Popcorn Talk. We will be doing Love, Simon. And next week we'll be doing, as of right now, two pieces of coverage specifically for Pacific Rim. One, our anatomy, and one, an interview with someone. We're going to tease you on that. We'll leave you to find out, won't we?
Yes, and if anybody was in Southern California going to WonderCon, I'll be there all day tomorrow. If by chance you happen to see me, say hey. I'll be at Artist Booth picking up more art and junk. But if you do in fact see me, say hey.
There you go.
Please.
And check out some past Alicia Vikander movies in the sense of Anatomy. We've reviewed pretty much
so many of her.
A lot of them. I can't guarantee all of her movies, but certainly enough of them to fill up your library or your weekend. Anyway, thank you guys as always. Talk to you next time. Bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network. The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of its owners or principals.